Thank you so much for joining us today for our Facebook Live vaccine Q&A for the COVID vaccine. So before we get started, do you guys mind introducing yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Dr. Brian Malte, pulmonologist here at Baxter Regional.
I'm Dr. Kevin Adkins from NCAMA Medical Association.
All right, so we have developed a list of questions here. Before we get started, we'll go through those, and then we'll answer some of the questions if we have time that the community has asked on the Facebook Live. So we'll go through those first. So can you please give us a basic overview of the COVID-19 vaccines that are available in the United States?
Can we tell you?
Yeah.
There are three vaccines available. One is the Johnson & Johnson, and then you have Pfizer's and Moderna's vaccine. Those two, Pfizer and Moderna, are a messenger RNA, and then the Johnson & Johnson actually has a DNA coding in it for the vaccine. We actually have a really good YouTube video that we're going to post that will cover these things in length, and the video is about 42 minutes long, so we don't have time to do that now, but it'll explain it very, very well, and I think most of you would understand it very well after you watch this. And it will probably dispel a lot of things that people have been very concerned about.
All right, thank you. All right, so one of the first questions that is a common myth is, will a COVID-19 vaccine alter my DNA?
Yeah, no, I don't. It's not going to alter your DNA. What it does is, this is particularly for the mRNA vaccines. So the vaccine is carried into your muscle tissue. Then there's a carrier that brings it to the cells where the mRNA starts to produce the protein that will be the spike protein that goes out of your cells. And that's where your antibody is pretty much attached to. It's not going to go to your DNA itself and, you know, change the genomic sequence of your DNA. So it's not true that it's going to alter your DNA.
Can I add something to that? The messenger RNA is like a recipe that is actually laid down up against your RNA that's inside your cells. And that RNA is actually not in the nucleus of the cell where the DNA is. It's outside that capsule. It's inside the cytoplasm. And that's where the recipe is transcribed. And a thing that people are really worried about is what happens to that messenger RNA after it gives its information to be transcribed into the proteins. Well, the messenger RNA that we give the people with the vaccine actually is quickly, it's dismembered by these enzymes that break it down when it's released from the RNA. So you cannot have any major side effects from the messenger RNA itself. It is actually recycled. It has amino acids in it. There are some lipids that are involved in that. And so all of that can actually be recycled in your body.
All right. Can a COVID-19 vaccine make me sick with COVID-19?
Go ahead.
So the COVID-19 vaccine, you know, what they do is they have the spike proteins. So it's just a single portion of the whole virus. With the spike protein, your body just reacts to the spike. The spike is just what makes the virus attach to your cells. So it's not the cause for you to get sick with the virus itself. It's everything else that's encapsulated in the virus that makes you sick. So there's no way that you can get sick with or have COVID-19 just with a vaccine.
Anything you want to add? No? Okay. Do any of the COVID-19 vaccines authorized for use in the United States shed or release any of their components?
Well, that's a good question. And the components of the messenger RNA, like we said before, can be just recycled because they're amino acids and the molecule that carries it to the cell is actually a lipid molecule. Well, that's just reabsorbed and broken down. And the same thing occurs with the actual messenger RNA that is the vaccine. So all those components will be broken down just like you digest food. You will digest this messenger RNA And it happens very rapidly after it turns on that antibody to be made.
All right, next, were the COVID vaccines developed too fast to be safe?
Yeah, so the COVID vaccines were developed fast. That's a remarkable feat of science, not necessarily skipping any one particular step. What they did was, you know, instead of going through animal studies, they pretty much went into human trials initially, but the sequence of going through human trials was followed, you know, usually in the normal sequence that they normally do, where they usually first find out whether the vaccine is safe. That's the more important question, you know, is it safe? Can people tolerate it? They use a few hundred people for that. Then they go to a bigger number to see if it's still safe. And at that point, they decide, you know, is it effective at that point? And that's when they go to the phase 3 trial, which they did last year. And they've shown that in the phase 3 trial, you know, it's 95% effective and safe at the same time, which is why, you know, the FDA released the emergency use authorization for these vaccines. It's, you know, developed fast within a year. The other vaccine that was developed, you know, close to this was measles vaccine that was developed and, you know, released 5 years at, from the time of research. So, and measles vaccine is also one of the more effective vaccines as well. Compared to the other vaccines like the flu, you know, flu vaccine, you get about 40-60% effectivity. So it's not as good as the vaccines we have right now.
Fortunate also for the research, the government gave a lot of money or helped them with the cost of this. Research like this is extremely costly, but this research has actually been going on for 20 years. And so they were already way ahead of the game, but when they figured out the sequence of the RNA, that made it a lot easier. Plus, when they actually gave them a lot of money to work on this project, that helped the pharmaceutical companies enlist more teams. Normally, there may be one team or two teams working on a project. Well, they may have had 20 or 30 teams working on this same project, which really helps them with the competition and makes them figure things out faster. Plus, they got rid of a lot of the red tape between these phases that Dr. Malti was talking about. They spend time and time just reviewing all this research before they make a decision to go to the next phase. Well, this time, they got rid of all that research, and they depended upon the scientists who do this on a daily basis to be honest and say, we got good results, let's go to the next step.
All right. Is it true that COVID-19 vaccines will deliver a microchip into my body?
Yeah. Now, that's far too advanced for you know, I mean, we sometimes think science is, you know, too fast, you know, but this, I think, is just far out, you know. Microchip usually entails a lot of silicon. They've not mentioned any silicon particles in these vaccines. Plus, you know, I just, out of curiosity, tried it also myself. Put a magnet there, didn't really attach to me. I didn't think there was any, you know, microchip in that thing. I think it's a lot of hearsay to say that there were microchips in it so that the government can detect you. Again, the government had no say in some of these vaccines. If you look at it, you know, Pfizer was offered money from the U.S. government, but they rejected the money, and they did all of their research on their own. So they did their study pretty much in Germany, UK, South Africa, and the U.S. You know, Moderna had some money from the U.S. government, but you can see their vaccine is just as effective as the Pfizer vaccine. So I don't think you know, it's false that, you know, these vaccines carry a microchip.
I don't feel like they can get the microchip through the needle.
Yeah.
Take a large needle.
All right. Is it safe for me to get the COVID-19 vaccine if I would like to have a baby one day, are pregnant, or breastfeeding?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's an ethical question, which I think you should discuss with your obstetrician. What we do know is with pregnant women, the risk of you ending up in the hospital and getting sicker is much higher than if you're not pregnant. So if you want to run that risk, you know, not see your baby if you're on the ventilator, that's your own risk. You take the risk. At the same time, we do know that the vaccines are helpful in preventing, you know, pregnant women from getting sick. So far, the registry from the U.S., we've had at least 35,000 pregnant women that have gotten the vaccine. They've had information on at least about 250 or so. And what they saw was the rate of natural delivery is just the same as someone who's not gotten the vaccine. The rate of miscarriage is just the same as someone who's not gotten the vaccine. So it's so far, it's panning out to be safe. In addition, if you want to protect your child, you know, you get natural immunity passed on to your child as soon as they're born. So I think it's a win-win situation for pregnant women to get it. But again, you know, you just have to weigh the risk and benefit.
Also, the CDC is following 2,700 females that have gotten pregnant and have received the shot, and they're following those all the way through specifically just to do that. And as of today, or yesterday, there had been no effects from the vaccines on that group. And you can go to cdc.gov and pull up a lot of that good information. And they'll give you the statistics also.
Yeah.
That I can't remember.
Yeah. One other thing is, you know, I mean, it's just a small number, you know, one small number meaning one. My wife got, my wife was pregnant. She got the vaccine. If any, my child was the heaviest, you know, of all the children. She was, he was 9 pounds, 2 ounces. So pretty heavy, healthy, no genetic defects, you know, it seemed to work. I had him tested also for the antibodies. He's gotten 4 times the antibody load as my wife did on the day of delivery.
Wow.
So it's really impressive how it's transmitted.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
All right. What is your recommendation regarding vaccination for children ages 12 to 17 who are now eligible to receive the vaccine?
Well, personally, I feel like following the government guidelines is the way to go with this because, you know, they're doing a lot of research to help us decide what these guidelines need to be. And because of that, that should be our current guidelines, what the CDC is saying. And children 12 to 17 definitely need the vaccine, especially to help them get back into the schools.
If I have already had COVID-19, do I still need the vaccine?
Very good question. Because previously, before the variants started popping out, you know, they looked at studies across different countries. What is your risk for getting infected again? Across the board, it's remarkable. It stayed consistent, 0.7%. So that's 0.7% chance that if you've had the virus, you're going to get it again. Now, when you have the variants coming in, that, you know, that's a different ballgame altogether. Just think of it this way. If you had 95% effectivity with a vaccine before these variants, and you see a drop in effectivity in preventing infection, then you might want to conclude that possibly if you've had the virus before, that your chances of getting it again might be higher than that 0.7% we had from, you know, last year. So, which is why we still recommend you get maybe a, you know, your vaccine still even after you've gotten it.
And we just had Dr. Bainey join us. I know you've been
thank
busy.
You.
Thank you so much
yes,
for joining us.
Sorry.
No worries. Do you mind introducing yourself?
My name is Raymond Bandy, and I do internal medicine here with a focus on infectious diseases.
All right. And our last question that we have developed, and then we'll go on to the community questions, is, can I still get COVID-19 after getting the vaccine?
I'll take that one. I actually looked this up last night, and in the United States, the best numbers that I could find was we've had 4,100 hospitalized patients with breakthrough COVID, and they had been fully vaccinated. Only 750 have died that have been fully vaccinated. 1,000 of those 4,100 had no symptoms. They were just found coincidentally. They were hospitalized for something else, tested, and found to have it, but no symptoms, and they were fully vaccinated. And 2,400 that were in the hospital with COVID, after being fully vaccinated, had symptoms, but left without major complications. So you can get COVID after being fully vaccinated. The odds are you're going to be mildly sick or have no symptoms at all.
Yep. The other thing also some people looked at is there was a new research also. So why are you getting breakthrough infections with certain patients, multiple myeloma, this type of blood cancer? They've looked at patients that have gotten the vaccine, and they've shown that as much as 15% have not mounted an immune response to the vaccine. So you can see the question now is, do they need maybe a higher dose? Do they need a booster? We don't know. But for some reason, the immune response of these patients to the vaccine is much less, especially if they're taking therapy like anti-CD therapy. It's a different type of therapy they do for multiple myeloma.
Also, people that have things like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, and all these bad inflammatory diseases, they are on medications that will suppress their immune system, and they have a much higher risk of getting this infection, even though they're fully vaccinated, just because their immune response wasn't very strong to the vaccine itself. But the vaccine is much better than not doing anything at all, especially for those patients.
All right, now we're on to the Facebook Live questions. The first one, how does the new Delta variant affect the over 80 elderly who are vaccinated?
Yeah, that's a good question because I'm a proponent of the vaccine, and what I feel is the older you are, the less robust your immune response, meaning your antibody level may not be as high. And so if you're over 80, you know, and you've had the vaccine early on, what are your chances of getting the new Delta variant? It's probably higher. You know, we've seen some cases in the hospital with patients in their, you know, patients in their 70s who've had breakthrough infection. We've not seen so much breakthrough infection in the younger population. And I feel like maybe as we gather more data, you know, we might be looking at needing a booster perhaps. We don't know. Either a booster or a different shot altogether.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things, though, is you can look at the percentages of coverage, you know, beta, delta, et cetera, but it doesn't change the fact that you need to be vaccinated and that your risk for having COVID and a bad outcome is going to be much greater if you're not vaccinated. So more data can come in on exact the levels of coverage. But it wouldn't change the fact that if you're over 80, you need to be vaccinated. And if you are vaccinated, that the odds are that you're going to have better protection against the variants than if you had not been vaccinated. So still, vaccine is the way to go.
Right. And just to clarify, for breakthrough, what do you mean by breakthrough is if you've had the vaccine, you can still get the virus.
Okay. Right.
All right. What would you tell someone who has cancer and has undergone three major surgeries, chemo, and radiation in the last year? Is it safe for that person to have the vaccine? And if so, which would you suggest?
Yeah, it is safe to have it. And you would want to get the vaccination. Now, the more immune compromised that you are because of chronic illness, chronic disease, or chemotherapy or something that you're on, the less vigorous your response is going to be, which means you would be at higher risk to get this than someone who was young and healthy. But once again, you would want to get the vaccination. And it is not an attenuated live virus. And so, therefore, you can't get the disease from getting the vaccine if you are immune compromised. So even if you are immune compromised, still the recommendation is you need the vaccination.
And the part of that question was, which vaccine would you get?
Yes.
I mean, I don't have a perfect answer for that, but I know that the Pfizer and Moderna have a little bit higher benefit and protection rate, so that would be something that a person like this would want to get, either the Pfizer or the Moderna, because
yeah.
they would have added protection with those two shots.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, Pfizer and Moderna,
yeah.
definitely the way to go as compared to the Janssen or Johnson & Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
All right. When will these younger kids be able to get vaccinated?
That's a good
yeah.
question.
Yeah, it depends on which younger kids. So the main fear we have is if the variant or the virus continues to, you know, mutate, you're going to start to see more and more kids getting affected. I've told my wife this last year, if the virus had affected the children first before the elderly, we might have approached this a little bit more differently, much more seriously, you know. Unfortunately, I think that's the trend we're facing right now. You know, the news came out just today. There was a five-year-old in Georgia who got sick and died from COVID-19. Obviously, the question is, you know, we didn't have enough data for these children to get vaccinated. It's still ongoing. It's ongoing in certain different states. The closest we have that's doing it is in Kansas City, or not Kansas, but Kansas State. So we don't have any data between the ages of 6 months till the age of before 12. We do have data for 12 to 17, which is why, you know, the vaccine is offered for that age group.
Although in general, those who get it, that would be very rare. In general,
right.
those who are young have much milder symptoms than those who are older, which is just one of the characteristics of this particular virus.
All right. The next question I can answer real quick. Which brand vaccine will be given out at the vaccine event Monday? And that's the Pfizer vaccine. All right. Why have the vaccines not yet gained full FDA approval?
Yeah. So that usually takes a process. They'll have to, you know, you're at the phase 3 trial. Now you're going to phase 4 where you're actually seeing it in, you know, communities. The FDA has a certain criteria they have to go through to confirm or to, you know, say whether officially they've endorsed it or not. Usually it takes about a year. We're not a year yet since they've released this. However, as far as we've heard, they're thinking about releasing the, you know, the information whether they're officially endorsing it, probably by August.
Are the vaccines still experimental?
I think the answer would be no to that. You've had, how many doses have been given now? Like
320 million,
yeah. So, you know, you're, in fact, these vaccines were first developed over a decade ago. So the science has been there for a long time. Fortunately, the first SARS and the MERS, they died out on their own. But the technology was there, the science was there. In fact, I was reading something the other day, I think it was Moderna, that the data was already there such to the point that when the genome of SARS-2 came out, they were giving vaccinations within 2 months of even knowing what the virus was. So, no, this is not experimental. It may be novel, but it's not experimental. It's not, nobody's experimenting on you, especially at this stage.
If you had COVID, how long should you wait till you get the vaccine?
It's just pretty much a straight up recommendation of 90 days. Is that correct?
Yeah, they usually recommend 90 days because it gives you time to recover from your initial infection. If you have the vaccine earlier than 90 days, the thought is you might have more adverse reactions, such as body aches. That's the main concern. But really, 90 days is pretty standard across the board.
All right. Would it be safe for someone to take the vaccine that has had a severe reaction to contrast dye and also has autoimmune problems?
Yeah, that would not be a contraindication. The only absolute contraindications are anaphylaxis to the vaccine. You would only know that if you had the first dose of it, or if you knew that you had had a serious allergic reaction to one of the components of the diluent that it's in. And if that's the case, if you have questions, all you would have to do is bring that to any of us here. We could look that up and tell you whether it'd be safe or not. But contrast dye, no, that's not a contraindication.
Okay. I take immunosuppressants. I have both Pfizer shots. Should I get a third vaccine booster? If so, which one?
Well, the issue of booster is one that may come up, and it may be that boosters are needed. As time goes by and data goes by, there's studies that are ongoing, but at this particular point, it's not known whether we need a booster or not. There's a lot of things that are driving the data and driving the studies, but at this particular point in time, we just do not know the answer as to whether we need a booster. And specifically, I don't know in any subpopulations if that's known, just in general.
Right.
The booster is being studied, but not known. I think it would even take a longer period of time
right. To
know. It's a very good question because you've got
somebody
who's immune compromised. Mm-hmm. Would a third dose be better, you know? But
right.
I don't know of any data to that right now.
Yeah. So Moderna and Pfizer, they're conducting live studies, you know, for booster shots. They give it within 4 to 6 months from the first dose. So they're enrolling participants for that. If you're interested, you can just go to clinicaltrials.gov and check it out. But the other thing also is in Israel, they've been giving booster shots to their elderly population. So if we get more information from that country, then we'll know really if it's been effective or not. Their vaccination rate in Israel is, I think, close to 90%. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
All right, maybe time for one more. Let's see. I have read that many people died from the vaccine. Is this true?
I actually have that statistic. I looked it up. And there is actually, I believe, 100 people that they can say has actually died from the vaccine. And I believe you alluded to the anaphylactic reaction, and that was part of it. And that, 100 out of 340 million in the U.S., the odds are pretty slim.
Yeah, I mean, it is, for a vaccine, it's incredibly safe. I think that's the bottom line. It would be, even serious anaphylaxis, I believe, if I have this right, it was like 4.5 in a million or something of that nature.
Okay.
And of course, the in our clinic that we're giving vaccinations, you know, all day long, we haven't had a single reaction, serious reaction. And if you were, we know now, you know, there's the, you know, we have the Benadryl, we've got the EpiPen. So it would really be, your chance of dying after having the vaccination would be extremely low, to where the possibility of you dying, especially if you're over the age of 60, if you get the virus, is significantly high. So once again, the risk versus benefit would be that you would want to get the vaccine. And in fact, overall, I mean, if there's just one message, I can't think of any reason out there for, you know, the majority of people, unless you have some specific, you know, something that I haven't even heard of, you know, you just need to get vaccinated. And that's the best thing for, you know, not only you personally, but for the whole community.
All right. Any data on risk of infection or breakthrough infection in individuals who have had COVID and been fully immunized? So they've had both.
Yeah. So not much data. Having said that, I know of one case. Unfortunately, had COVID last year, got the vaccine earlier this year, got COVID again. So that's just one though.
What about cancer patients? Should they vaccinate?
Absolutely. They're high risk for complications and worsening diseases, immunosuppressed. They can get the pneumonia from it much easier. Just all the complications.
Okay. All right, I think we have time for one more. Can you explain why the CDC recommends children 12 and over to be vaccinated. However, the World Health Organization website says 18 and older.
Yeah, I don't. I know there can be disagreements amongst, you know, different groups of people. I'm not certain. I know the 12 and over is what I would recommend, but why the reason for the variance, I do not know.
Right.
That's a question. Okay. What is the antibody infusion that is given to someone with COVID? Apparently, it makes you feel better.
It's not always going to make you feel better. The antibody infusion we've been giving this since last year. We're using a different combination right now. It's ciceravimab and imdevimab. It's just two different antibodies combined together in one infusion. And if you get the infusion early, meaning within 10 days, me personally, I prefer it within 5 days, there's a chance for some reason that some patients do feel better the next day, okay? What it's really designed to is to, you know, prevent the hospitalizations. So if you get the infusion, you get it early enough, you may not get sick enough that will make you land in the hospital. So if you or your family member or anyone you know gets sick with COVID-19 and is at high risk, meaning a BMI of at least 25 and above, okay, so that's a very small criteria to meet. 25 or above, or if you have other conditions like you're above 65, above 55 with high blood pressures, kidney disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, go ahead and call your doctor and see if you can get the infusion. We do give it here. They've been averaging maybe 10 patients a day. So it may make some people better, which I've not been seeing much from last year, though, for some reason.
All right. I think that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us during your busy days. And thank you to all of those out there who participated and watched. Please share this with your friends and family.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.